What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our Whiskey Wednesday episodes. My main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
Couple things on the agenda.
Yes, sir.
The housekeeping items.
You got to do it.
Those of you that are new to these episodes and listening to us, we do two a week. One is what we're doing right now is Whiskey Wednesday. We talk about hot topics, about short-term rental industry, how it affects like current events or affecting your investing journey. Then on Fridays, we do expert interviews with short-term rental investors, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yes, sir.
But today, you just showed me this stat. 58.7% of the people who watch and listen to our podcast on a regular basis. Those of you that are regular listeners, do not subscribe.
Come on.
Those things help us.
Yeah. So
hit the subscribe button. Follow us, whatever you do. I guess, would you subscribe to podcasts?
Yes. Dude, and you can subscribe on YouTube, especially if you're watching this. But I got to say, we went up on viewership, so people are sharing the show. But just subscribe.
Just subscribe.
Just subscribe.
Those,
it helps us.
Those things help us. We don't run ads or sponsorships, guys, and those things really do help us in the algorithm. And so that is a small ask that we ask you to follow us and subscribe on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things help. And then tax season,
man,
a lot of people are doing their taxes right now. A lot of the pain of writing those checks, or you know, having having to filter that money to old Uncle Sam. And I don't know about the rest of you listening, but when I see what's going on in Washington, the last place I want my money going is there. Because it is a absolute I say a circus, right?
Yeah,
let's keep it as nice as possible. But the nice thing about the tax codes that are written with short-term rental loophole and everything else, if you are feeling that pain and you're thinking about not wanting to do that next year and wanting to help have Uncle Sam help you fund your vacation rental portfolio, we know how to do that. So reach out to us. You know, those things are...
support@odyssey.com. Send an email.
Yeah, get it reached out. And then, just got back from speaking of the government and the shutdowns and all the things that are going on there. They can't get their, you know, they can't get anything together there.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're all the TSA line, know, talk and how long some of those lines are. And the airports, I just got back from Dallas. Both Salt Lake and Dallas were both in really good shape.
Really?
So, yeah, I didn't have really any waits.
You know? Oh, and well, that's really interesting. I'm very curious on that.
Salt Lake was super efficient. Got right through in Salt Lake. What? Dallas, the way Dallas is laid out, if you've ever been to DFW, there's a security checkpoint for every gate. So they have all their different gates lined out, and then so like their A gates, their B gates, their C gates, all the way through, you know, all of them. And they all have their own security checkpoints. So that really helps because it spreads out the crowd. And so it was...
Is it a smaller airport?
No, it's a big airport. It's really spread out, and they have the different checkpoints for every one of the gates. And so it's kind of a unique airport when you go in and out of DFW. And so that was running smoothly. But I was at the wedding with some other people that came in from Atlanta. Had a 6-hour wait in Atlanta, which was brutal.
Standing there for six hours in line.
Another one that was in Houston. I think they had a 3-hour wait, 3.5-hour wait in Houston. So some of the airports aren't faring as well with the TSA. And so travel is definitely being affected. We talked a little bit about that on a previous podcast, but it was definitely, it depends on where you're flying in and out of, because Dallas and Salt Lake were both,
We got our stuff together. I'm curious, how many people were there? Was it kind of packed? Did you see a lot of families there? You know, spring break time was.
I actually did see. You could tell it was spring break, lots of.
Okay, so it's spring break time. There's a long waits, but people are still going out. Let's just make that clear that people are still going.
They're still traveling.
That's interesting. Okay. All right, so there's a lot of people there, long lines, but it just kind of depends.
Yeah.
All right.
They said that I heard that ICE got deployed this week. I saw on Monday. They said that Atlanta went from an average of like 3.5 hours wait times down to 40 minutes. So
there you go.
Hey, maybe they're making some those people
some kind of progress.
Love or hate ICE. At least if you're a traveler, you're happy to see them show up and the wait go down.
Oh man, that's interesting. Did you see any? Were there any?
Yeah, in Dallas, I saw ICE. Yeah.
They're,
I don't know why, because it wasn't very busy.
Yeah.
There was both when I went in and came out. It was the lines were. I mean, you're talking less than 10 minute waits. So
wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's so much different than what the media wants to tell you. I mean, we really broke it down, all the articles and stuff, but you're telling me that your weight was that little?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
insane. All I've seen is like, you better get there 8 hours before. It's going to be terrible. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it matters where you're flying in and out of for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, let's give the outline of what today's episode is all going to be about. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Here we go. We're going to talk about how much money do you actually need to retire? For a lot of people, you're not just going to retire. You're just getting older and poorer, and it's not looking great for you. Or maybe you're a little bit older and you're listening to this and you're thinking about, you know, what are some of these asset classes I can do to really, you know, prepare to have some kind of bunker for retirement? You know, we got this amazing statistic I'll read to you, but we're really breaking down retirement today. What does that look like? How many people are ready? How much money do you really need to have? What about some other things like, you know, 401k, Social Security, these other things? We're going to break down advice and really how short-term rentals can be a nice little hedge. Nice. We're going to talk about, let me just read this. It's a little paragraph here, this nice little stat. Median savings for all employed adults between ages 21 and 64 amounted to $955. That's insane. The nonpartisan think tank found, tapping data from the U.S. Census Bureau survey of income and program participation. For workers who do have retirement savings, the median balance stands at $40,000, the group found, a far cry from the roughly 1.5 million that Americans say they need to retire comfortably. Tell me, a lot of people are kind of behind. Right. It's, or it could be
a lot.
A lot of people are maybe aren't ready for this. And I've seen another statistic where they're saying people are thinking they're going to have to work longer in their life. They're not going to really retire at the normal age that they thought they were going to be. So it kind of could be a little bit of a scary topic.
Yeah.
For some people, it can kind of be a little tough. But is there a certain place you kind of want to start with here? You know, do we want to?
First, let's go back. So one, you always have to take the stats that we read with, and you got to, with any statistics and with any headlines, you got to read between the lines a little bit. One, that's a wide range of people, right?
Yep.
That's from 21 to 64. That's like the difference between the savings of, you know, the 45 to the 65 group is going to be significantly higher, most likely, than the group from 20 to 30, right? And
right.
so. That is so keep that in mind as well, because most of the wealth is going to be held in those later years, with an average going up significantly from that. So that 922 is a really, really, really scary stat overall. Yeah. The average savings.
Hook.
Yeah, it's a great hook.
It's a great hook.
But that's it's accounting for a lot of people that are probably just beginning their earning career too. And so you probably have to segment that, would be my guess, right? Yeah, you just pulled it up. Average retirement savings approximately $300,000 with median of about $115,000 from 45 to 54. So significantly higher, but not quite enough to retire on,
right.
You would say. So what does that tell us?
Mm-hmm.
That tells us that the narrative we have been led to believe to be true and the plan that we have been led to believe that we should follow is falling short, right? And so this plan of, you know, invest into your 401k and think about your pensions and think about retirement, and at the end of the day you work till you're 65 and you're going to tap into that and everything's going to be great, that's not the case. You're not going to most likely have enough money at the end of the day on average. And so what does that tell us? Like, what is so obviously we've been kind of, you know, marching to the beat of a different drummer when we start to say, hey, listen, we're going to go against the narrative. We're going to go against this plan that's been laid out for us because we're starting to recognize this plan doesn't work.
Right.
And I think a lot of people underestimate what they can do in a 5 to 10 year time horizon by just changing the plan. Right. I think there's a lot of people who think, well, you know, obviously the younger you are and the younger you can start with something else. And I mean, it goes back to what we preach, you know, first and foremost is personal responsibility, you know, really saying, hey, I'm going to be self-reliant. I'm going to be personally responsible for what I am going to do with my life down the line. I'm not necessarily just going to buy in to the narrative that's been written for me by somebody else on a different plan that might work for somebody else for, you know, maybe a few generations back. I mean, Social Security, they say in 6 years is going to be bankrupt. There's not going to be any more money on Social Security. So, I mean, people were worrying about if Social Security is part of your retirement plan, and you're not
seven
retired
years
already.
You're 7 years out.
Yeah, you're apparently we're going to be out of money in 6 years. And
oh,
so,
man,
it is that, I mean, all of those things, and we've been seeing this for quite a while now.
Yeah,
that the narrative and the plan, the old school plan of go to college, get a job, put money in your 401k mm-hmm. for 40, 45 years, and then you're going to have enough to retire. Right. At the end of the day, that plan's not working for us. We're not putting enough away to make that plan work. Mm-hmm. And so with everything going up, we have to say, okay, where can I get better leverage? Where can I get, you know, what are some other things that I can do on my own mm-hmm. to start to build my own retirement, start taking control of my own, mm-hmm. my own funds. Right. And mm-hmm. so the, obviously short-term rentals are one asset class, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it's the end all be all. What I think the real key here is that the what everybody is doing is not working.
Right.
Right. And so we have to start to say, okay, what are some of the things we can do different? Short-term rentals happen to be one of those things you can do different.
Right. Right.
Doesn't mean it's going to be the right fit for everybody. We love it and it can be. But what the most important thing is you got to start thinking differently. You got to start thinking, hey, maybe I shouldn't rely on somebody else. Maybe I shouldn't rely on employers, government, you know, different, you know, financial right. advisors that are just going to do the traditional route and of saving in my 401k. And most of the time, what we're finding when we look at the averages, you know, when the median retirement savings is $115,000 from the 45 to 65 year old crowd, that's a pretty sobering statistic. You know, not as bad as the $955 that we saw with the whole group, but it's not that good.
Yeah. All right. Talk to me about this. How do you kind of handle, wrap your head around this idea of, you know, some people think, and I completely understand the thought process of doing this, of wanting just to kind of squirrel everything away, just put it into account and just hold it there. And then one day this will be a nice little egg. Right. But then when you hear things of maybe the U.S. dollar is going down or you can't buy as much over a couple of years, would you kind of argue against that point of just storing it away? Or do you still think that's kind of a smart way to go?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's smart at all.
Right.
I think you have to have leverage in the money that you're trying to save with different assets that have the ability to outperform inflation.
Right.
Right. When you squirrel it away, you put $100,000 under the mattress and you know, and all of a sudden you're losing 3 to 4% every single year in buying power. You know, you go 5 to 10 years down the line, you go a 10-year period, all of a sudden you lost, let's say you lost 3% a year for 10 years. That $100,000 has about $70,000 in buying power. That's not good. So but what if I put it into something that is ahead of that, that's making me an extra, 3% a year. Let's say I'm making 6%. So I'm losing 3 to inflation, but I'm actually making 6 on it. So I'm net positive 3% a year. Now all of a sudden, my $100,000 in buying power has $130,000 of buying power instead of $70,000. So the gap is massively different in how you choose to do it. And a lot of times I think people think, well, I'm going to be just super conservative and I'm going to just say, I'm going to put in cash equivalent type of accounts, right? And we're seeing it right now. Mm-hmm. We have a record. I think it's over this now, but the last stat I saw is $7.6 trillion sitting in basically in cash equivalent type of accounts, right? And so money market funds, cash accounts, all of those different things. That's the largest amount that's ever been in that type of a, sitting on the sidelines, basically. $7.6 trillion sitting on the sidelines. It's not, that money's not keeping up with inflation. And so if I do that long term, my buying power with my dollars, if the dollar is going to go down in value and inflation goes up and the cost of everything goes up, that's not a recipe for success. That's a recipe is a losing proposition for me. So the longer I'm sitting there waiting, the less buying power I have, the less my money's worth. And sitting under the mattress, that's what happens. Now, if I buy assets, tangible assets, things that are going up in value, if I leverage into those assets, not over leverage, but if I use leverage to purchase some of those assets and I'm in a good position, if those assets can support whatever debt service I have on properties, which is why we love real estate, because the real estate can actually produce revenue to support the debt service. So I have leveraged money into these assets that are going up in value. Yeah. I have a revenue to pay my debt service. All of a sudden that becomes a winning proposition down the line where I'm now well outperforming inflation. I'm making some money. So down the line, 5-10 years from now, I've got a lot more buying power and I can start to parlay that into other assets and other tangible assets. Maybe just build my portfolio of real estate, whatever that is. And so there's a lot of different levers you're pulling. But what happens is we just buy into this narrative that has been written for us to ultimately become dependent on the system.
Yeah. No, and so, yeah, that's a great word.
And when And that's what, that's all the, you know, whoever you want to call it, the higher ups, the elites who, you know, wrote all the rules so that we can all be dependent upon them. That's not what you want, in my opinion.
No. We want, you can't do it. You just, you physically, it doesn't make sense. No. You can't do it. We're looking at the numbers. It's a data-driven decision right here, and you, it ain't going to happen.
But
it ain't going
to
work.
It's really hard. I've got a call right after this podcast with somebody that says, listen, it's really a hard decision for me to move into a different asset class. I'd like to talk to you about it because, you know, we're following all the rules. We're putting money in the 401k. I've got it into a brokerage account. My financial advisor that runs my account says that we should just keep following this plan. But when I'm looking at the numbers, we're going to be nowhere near retirement, and we're going to hit retirement age in the next 15 years. And I'm not even close.
Wow.
And yet they've got, you know, in this case, they had a decent amount of money sitting in there, but their lifestyle is not going to be supported into the retirement years. And I'm like, man, you could, and what they're wanting to know is, talk me into doing something different, basically, right? Yes. And there's a lot of reasons to do something different, but everything you do has risk. Everything. Mm. And so there's two sides to every coin. And sometimes we will talk ourselves into why we shouldn't do it more than why we should, even though when we write it out on paper and we look at the stats and we look at everything, we can clearly see that the narrative I've been following, the plan I've been following, is not working. However, it is familiar to me. And it's familiar to the crowd, the masses. They buy into it. And so I'm not going to get ridiculed for that. I can say, well, I followed the rules and it didn't work out.
Yeah, blame someone else. Yeah.
Blame somebody else. I don't have to take full responsibility. If I take that risk and do something different, if it screws up and if it doesn't work, now it's all on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And I have to shoulder the risk or I have to shoulder the blame. And a lot of people, they would rather sit in the crowd of, I know this is probably not going to work, but this is what everybody's doing. So I'm going to sit here in and watch it just kind of not work out. And because it's comfortable, I kind of know what it is. Everybody else is doing it. I'm okay with that versus taking the risk and doing something different. And it's really interesting to me how hard it is for a lot of people to cross that, you know, and take the chance of betting on themselves.
Yeah. Okay, let me read this. Yes, as of late 2025 and early 2026, there's a record amount of cash, roughly $7.6 trillion to $7.8 trillion parked in U.S. money market funds. That's from Investment Company Institute. I want to hit on this because you said an amazing keyword, and I think this is crucial to it, the conversation. And you tell me what you think. What about you said the word lifestyle. For some people, you're living a lifestyle right now, and if you're okay with completely doing away with your current lifestyle or the lifestyle that you built up in your head for retirement, then maybe would you argue that the 401k, Social Security, the money saved away is good for you? Or do you think even with you want to come, you know, stick with that lifestyle, you just need something different?
Well, that's what they're trying to sell you now. So now you see that this is not going to work. We're like, okay, I'm not going to have anywhere near the amount of money coming to me in retirement as I do right now in my earning years, right?
That's crazy. Yeah.
So now what they tell you is, well, you're going to have less things you're paying for. You're going to have less bills. You're going to have less this. You're going to have less that, which in my opinion is a complete lie. First of all, you might have less of some things, but you're going to have a lot more of other things like health, you know, related stuff. You know, maybe, as you age, you're going to need more stuff to stay healthy, right? And more things that are going to have. Hey, listen, I plan on having grandkids and families that I want to go visit and I want to go do stuff. So my travel expenses are probably I want them to skyrocket. What I don't want to do is say, so they sell you on the fact that you're going to have less of this, this, and this, but they don't tell you, well, you're probably going to have less of this, but you're going to have a lot more of this, right?
Yeah.
When I retire, I don't want to just sit on my porch and not do anything.
Right.
Right. And so I might have my house paid off. I might not have certain bills, but I'm going to have other things that I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you're okay, and some people are not, they might not be okay with it, but they're forced to be okay with saying, okay, I have to just, I'm on a fixed income now and I've got to budget this X amount of money I have every month, which is nowhere near what I had coming in my earning years, which is why a lot of retired folks are choosing to go back to work. Okay. Listen, I got my retirement income coming, but I'm going to go back to work just to have the same type of money coming in that I had or somewhere close to supplement what I had during my earning years, because they start to realize, oh, you know what? I don't want to stop spending money. I don't want to stop doing stuff, right? Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean,
this, which I can't tell you how many, like, and we've all heard it from financial advisors and everybody else saying, oh no, you're okay. You're going to be fine running down this road because you're going to have less of this. And you're not going to be paying for that. And you're not going to need to do this. Mm. And I'm looking at it saying, man, yeah, you can all go to hell. I'm planning on doing a lot more. You know, I'm looking forward to those later years in life when I have grandkids and families and kids getting, you know, married and all those different things that I just want to be able to enjoy and fund and spoil. And all that stuff. I want to keep moving forward. I don't want to say, okay, now I'm forced to dial it back because I didn't follow the right plan.
Man, this is fantastic. I can feel the listeners getting shaken up right now. Okay, talk to me about timeline here. Maybe someone's listening to this and they're maybe 40 years old and they're going, man, maybe I need to do action now. But maybe there's another listener a little bit older, maybe 65, 70, thinking, wow, this is, I followed that rule. Is it too late for them, do you think?
How late are you planning on living? I mean,
yeah,
let's say you're 65. Yeah. You're ready to retire. And you're like, man, I'm sitting on $300,000 in my retirement account. Mm-hmm. Should I do something different now? I can't risk this. No, you have to be conservative. You don't have the ability to go roll the dice. But what are you going to do? You know, go like, you, hopefully you got another 20 years left in you, right? 85 or so is, I don't know what average age is. 85. Yeah. So you got 20 years left.
Yeah.
You're not going to do something. Do you know what you can do in a 5 to 10 year time horizon? Mm. Who cares if you're 75? Like, start doing something now. The younger you are, the better, right? You get into your really early years, 20s and 30s, you might not have the buying power and you might not have the income as somebody maybe later on in their life. But what you have is a massive advantage is time. Time is on your side.
Right.
Because you can start compounding way earlier than that person that is 65. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to have nearly as much in play, especially in the beginning. Because it's going to compound. And so you have time on your side. Maybe not. The other person might have lump sums on their side to be able to put into something.
Right.
And so is it too late? No, it's never too late. Mm. What is the plan? Like, what's the alternative?
Right.
And so,
I mean, what's your other option, man?
What are your other options, right? Your only argument and which is, I buy into this because I was this person for a long time, is you see the younger crowd nowhere near as interested in what we're doing. It's too long. It's a longer term process, right? They're way more attracted to crypto. They're way more attracted to day trading. They're just like, they're really chasing these really more risky, volatile type markets. And I mean, that's okay. They can, because if it's more risky, it's more volatile, they have chances for bigger upswings, but they have bigger chances for big risks, right? Or big losses. And so if those losses come, they also have time on their side to recover from.
Right, yeah.
But, I believe like slow and steady wins the race. And so what you're trying to do with short-term rentals specifically, you kind of get the best of both worlds. You can have some big wins, but it is still a long-term investment. Mm. It is something that we're really compounding. And especially those people that are in their peak earning years, where they're paying or making a decent amount of money, they're paying a decent amount of taxes. That is a massive lever to be able to accelerate your progress. We hit it on the front of the top end of this episode with short-term rental loophole. So there are things about this asset class that are probably more attractive to those people that are in their peak earning years, paying a lot in taxes, have the ability to go buy quality assets in quality areas, and then, but don't need those massive wins today. And they're allowing to run for 3, 5, 10 years to build something that is way bigger and way better than what they're doing with their regular contributions to their 401k.
Okay, what should be the goal? Should they be looking for passive income? Should they be looking for more leverage? Should they be looking for tax savings? Or should they, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how to help these people.
It's a combination.
It's all of those?
It's all of them. Yeah, okay. Right? Because there's like, for example, cash flow appreciation, right? Those are inverse related. Mm-hmm. The markets that give you the highest cash flow are usually the properties that appreciate the least. Mm-hmm. And so if I go into really highly appreciating markets, they're going to cash flow the least because they're really expensive to buy, right? They still make good money, but they have to cover a lot of debt service. They have to cover a big acquisition chunk, right? And so it's a combination of all of them. What you're trying to do is get a good mix of all of them.
I hear you.
And so so what you're really looking at is, what is my overall internal rate of return with this investment? And you know, it's very realistic for us to have very high internal rates of return on these investments, especially with the power of leverage. It's not unlikely to have a very average type of a property giving us a 25 to 35% internal rate of return, not even really counting our tax advantages. When you tax, you know, I don't really loop that into my internal rate of return. I do it separately because our big short-term rental tax loophole advantage is a one-time deal, right? You're getting that year one,
right?
And it's a massive, it adds massively to that internal rate of return. We calculate it, but I want to see what is my internal rate of return on a property. And that is a combination of note pay down, appreciation, cash flow, you know, the tax advantages, all of those different things that we're doing with that property. And if I can, if I'm getting a 25 to 30% return, I'm doubling my money every 3 to 4 years. And that's on a very conservative, those are not taking big swings. If I hit a home run, I'm getting, you know, 50, 60% internal rates of return. I'm doubling my money every 2 years. Wow. That's, you know, you can make a lot of gains when you do that, right? And so when you can really shorten the amount of time that you're getting a double on your money, all of a sudden you give yourself 5 or 10 years with quality assets and you doubled your money 3 or 4 times. That's a big deal.
Right. Okay, man. Send us an email, support@vodisey.com, VODYSSEY.com, if you want to do this. I want to start tying a bow on this thing. Let's hit it. I want to talk about a little bit how much work is this going to take. I want to answer that, but I just want to throw it out there that the short-term rentals are fantastic. We know plenty of empty nesters that love to do this. People in retirement love to do this because we sell the lifestyle asset aspect of this. Of, you know, you're in retirement. You want to go vacation in Florida or wherever you go. You can now go use your property and make money from it and use leverage and these other things you just talked about. That's a huge part of it. Now, someone may think, you know, Sean, maybe I just want to relax and blame somebody else, kind of how we hit on earlier, because they think this is going to take a lot of work. You know, they don't know that. We teach the property manager. I mean, you can do self-managing if you want to as well, but you can pass that off to somebody. You can have someone to help with the design. You can have someone help you with the photography. How much of this work is actually, like, what's the labor involved? I'm 65, man. You know what I'm saying? How hard is this going to be for me to freaking learn?
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, well, this is what it is. I mean, here's the deal.
Okay.
Like, if I'm like, if that's my attitude, don't do anything. You should do what everybody else is doing. Misery loves company. I promise there's a lot of people who will wrap their arms around you and say, yep, you know, it's not your fault.
Right.
Right. If I'm going to do anything that is different, it is going to be hard. Now, every step of the way, here at Vodisey, we always have three options for every single thing that we do. And we have basically a paint-by-numbers program. We know exactly what we're doing, exactly how we underwrite, exactly how we set these properties up, exactly how we market them. Every step of the way, you can do it yourself, which is if you have more time than money and you want to put more work and roll up your sleeves and have more effort involved, and it doesn't cost you as much, you just do it, right? You learn how to do it and you implement it. Takes more time, doesn't cost as much money. Then we have this hybrid model. You pay a little bit for some professionals to help you, but you're going to also be involved and you're put it all together. So that's kind of a good mix of, I'm going to put some work in, I'm going to let pay for other people to do the things that are maybe a little bit, you know, beyond my capabilities of time or effort or whatever, right?
Right.
And then you have a full done for you. If you're the type of person that's like, hey, listen, I don't want to do this. I'm buying into this process, but I really don't want to put in all the work because I'm busy and I don't have time, but I've got more money than time. I can hire people to do every single step of it for me.
Yeah.
And so you have all of those different options. And that's at Vodisey, that's pretty much everywhere you go, right? You have those options. There's not a lack of information on putting things together. And so you can go DIY almost anything. But the answer to the question is it easy? No, it's not. It's hard. Because the hard part is making the decisions and getting the right mindset, understanding the process and the plan. And it's not going to be the same as what everybody else is doing. And that's hard to buy into, period.
Right.
I mean, it is. You know, we always say it's lonely at the top. There's a reason that saying exists because part of that loneliness is everybody telling you you shouldn't be doing this, or this is going to be too scary, or it's going to be too hard, or there's going to be more work than you want to do. The answer to all those is, yeah, it's scary. Yes, it's hard. Yeah, nobody's doing it, right? And so it's much easier to just stay where we're at,
right?
Because it's comfortable.
Man, living paycheck to paycheck in your golden years, that seems tough too, man.
I agree. That seems real tough, man. I've done both.
Yeah,
I've had enough money in the bank to pay all my bills, and I've had not enough money to pay all my bills. And I promise you, one of them is a lot better, yeah. in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, man. That's all we have for today.
Okay.
I think we Good. Shook some people up a little bit, gave Hopefully. You plenty of information yeah. on what things actually look like, how you can be best prepared coming these later years of life. But that's all we got for today.
And if you're part of that group, you know, $7.6 to $7.8 trillion sitting in cash equivalent accounts, sitting on the sidelines, yeah. that money is really sitting there waiting to be deployed.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, most of the people, if you are listening and you are some of that group and you're waiting for the right time, I'm telling you right now is a good time to be considering short-term rentals, real estate in general. It's one of those times where, you know, that lots of people are sitting on the sidelines. We talked about a few episodes back, only 17% of consumers feel like now is a good time to buy real estate.
Right.
That is a glaringly obvious sign that now is the right time, right? Because when everybody is doing something, you want to do the opposite. And so it doesn't mean you just throw caution to the wind. Like, obviously, you know, sometimes we preach to the choir of those of you listening to these episodes, you're probably listening to other people as well. You're educating yourself, but don't just get used to sitting on the sidelines and getting comfortable sitting on the sidelines.
So, let me say the last thing here.
Yeah.
If you're thinking that maybe we're just kind of trying to sell you on this, I would say we do two podcasts every week. We have this one and one's on Friday. Yeah. Sean does it with a member every Friday, a different member every Friday. Don't want to listen to us. Listen to the people. This past week, we had one on Friday. They have 6 properties. They're doing amazing. Go back and listen to these other people that have real stories, real testimonials. It's not just us trying to sell you on it.
No.
That's all I got.
4 years of interviews every single week, and there's no shortage of them. And our goal is, right, I always say, our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. On those podcasts, I always tell people, we're here to share the good, the bad, the ugly, so you know exactly what it is that you're walking into. But guess what? Every single, like 90% of them, at the end of every episode, I say, what do you wish you knew before going into this? Yes. What piece of advice would you give your younger self? 90% of them say, I wish I would have started sooner. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have got into this sooner than I did. Mm-hmm. Because they start to see the power of being in it for a few years. They're like, man, what if, you know, I can't wait to be in it for 10 years or longer, right? And right. so you can build something really, really significant in a short period of time, relatively speaking.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of people overestimate what can happen in 30 days, but they way underestimate what they can do in a year.
I love that quote. All right, we got to get you out of here. Let's do it.
Let's do it. We'll wrap up. Those of you that are listening, we always appreciate your time. Thank you for spending it with us. We know it's valuable, and we very much appreciate it. At the very beginning of this, I gave you that reminder to like and follow and subscribe to whatever platform you're watching or listening on, so that we don't have that stat of 58.7%, it says, not subscribed, that are regular listeners. So, guys, help us get that under 50% of you that are regular listeners that don't subscribe. Those things really do help us, and helps keep us from having to run ads and sponsorships, so you don't have to listen to anything interrupting our conversation. Mm-hmm. And so the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.